Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All About Romance. I'm your host, Tricia Harley McCarthy, a platform for writers, authors, and poets alike who love everything about romance, just like I do. Today's special guest is ML Broom. She's a great author friend of mine who's going to be turning the tables and interviewing me for On Ice, my release on December 31st, a sports hockey book. So join us as we get together with our craziness and as Julie interviews me about the book and all the other trials and tribulations of two authors trying to make it in a world of romance. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to All About Romance. I'm Tricia Harley McCarthy, and today's special guest is ML Broom. She wrote a Series of Moments trilogy, which is fantastic. I urge you all to get it. It's now available in a box set, available on Amazon, so at a price of $2.99. So I urge you to go get it. I rated all the books 5 stars, and it's well worth the read. So without further ado, I'm going to bring ML Broom on. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be back here again.
I'm glad you're on the show today, too, because you're one of
my
dearest
friends. We always have fun
together. We do, and it's our craziness, you know, kind of bubbles out. One day we're all good, the next day we're a mess. So it's welcome to the life of an author, you know, the insecurities, the ranting, all the fun stuff that goes along with being an author that you don't really see. We're always trying to be proper, you know, on social
media.
They
never tell you that when you sign up, you know, that's not in the job description. That's the fine print somewhere that we don't read. We're like, no, we'll be a bestseller. We don't hear all the rest.
Yeah. As we're trying to make our way through social media and the hashtags and promos and marketing, you know, indie authors really have that challenge of self-marketing and what's the latest trend, giveaways, newsletters, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, takeovers from Facebook groups. I mean, there's a whole myriad of things that we all do to try to get the word out to new readers to, you know, invest some time in our book and purchase them. We put a lot of hard effort and work into. And so I think in the long run, it'll pay off. You just have to be consistent with it.
Well, it was interesting to me to hear that, I mean, we're indie authors, so we know going into it that we're going to have to do our own marketing. And I have learned that I suck at marketing. I really suck at self-promotion. But and you know, because you're my friend.
Yeah.
But I also have heard that the traditionally published authors, it's pretty much left to them to do their own marketing as well. That it's not, a lot of people have that idea that if they sign up with a traditional publisher, that everything's going to be taken care of. And to some degree it is. But a lot of it still falls to them, especially if they're a newbie. So it seems to be something across the board that authors have to learn to embrace. You have to love to hate it and hate to love it and do it anyway. But anyway.
I know. And we discover new ways of doing things. You know, for example, if you're an author and you're looking to get some press, you know, you could go to Goodreads and they have their cover of the month. And that's really fun because a lot of people can get involved and your followers and your readers can get involved and vote for your cover. That's one way and it's free. There's nothing about it. There's
right.
Wait. I'm sorry. I apologize. All author is the one with the cover of the month. Goodreads is when you have the anticipated read of the month. And On Ice was involved with that one, and I got to top 60. So, you know, for Goodreads and all the number of books on there, it was amazing, you know, that so many people were so willing to, you know, help me, you know, get to that point. And I was shocked that I got down from, started at 123 and I got down to 60. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it really is in the world of romance, especially contemporary.
Absolutely. And you were releasing in a very heavily populated month also.
Yeah.
So for the fact that you were able to hit that number in December with all the Christmas romance releases is incredible.
That was very pleasing to me. And there's a lot of great reviews. And, you know, along with the great reviews also comes with, you know, some negative ones. And, you know, that's just part of the, par for the course. And so, you know, my stories aren't for everybody. I like to do angsty, steamy romance. That's what I do. I love relationships. They're complicated. And anyone who tells you they're not is not in reality, because they really are. And that's what fascinates me about the human psyche and how we've been shaped from a young age about how we view the opposite sex or your partner or whatever it is, you know, whoever you're seeing. There's a lot of assumption in relationships. There's a lot of unknown, a lot of insecurities from your childhood that you bring table with you. And there's a lot of evolvement with this, you know, with a partner or a spouse. So, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs in life. So that's kind of what I write. And it might be a little over the top at some point, but you know something, that's okay. That's what I write. If you like that, great. Embrace my book. If you don't, then move on. There's other authors you probably will be better suited to read than me. And so that's kind of my disclosure to people.
Full disclosure, Tricia.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I've read several of your books, and On Ice is one of them. And what I absolutely adore about it, yeah, it is angsty, but you and I have had this conversation in the past that – I don't want to read a day-to-day account of I went to the store, I went to the bathroom, I cleaned the I mopped the floor. I don't care. You know, I want to live vicariously through these people, through this couple. And I want it to be over the top, because otherwise it's going to read like a grocery list. And you are the queen of angst when it comes to twists and turns, and you drop people on their heads most of the time in the middle of the book. But thank God it all comes back together. I've had minor heart attacks reading your stories.
Yes.
But they all come together beautifully, and your characters do evolve. It's unbelievable how much they grow and their arc over the course of the story. You should be very proud of that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's heartening to hear people appreciate your characters, you know, and it's also a testament to the fact that, you know I'm not going to please everybody, but the people that I do please, that makes everything, you know, that's the icing on the cake, honestly. So, you know, we're writers, we're human, we have emotions, and we do get affected by, you know, the good and the bad. So, yeah. You know, I think if people want to leave a review that's honest, that's what I always encourage. But, you know, realize that we also have feelings too. So, you know, write, you know, the golden rule, be kind. You don't have to be unkind to write a review. You really don't. You can just be honest about it, but
right, like the one that I was talking about that I had on Goodreads, and someone labeled my series as a DNF, a did not finish. But the way that she put it was very kind. It was, I just couldn't get into it. There wasn't anything glaringly wrong with the story. It just wasn't for me. That's absolutely fine, because I picked up plenty of books like that. Granted, I generally don't take the time to actually write something like that, but at the same time, I can appreciate that. I can respect that, because it's not, like you said, not for everyone. But you're absolutely right about the fact that there's no need to be cruel. Be kind. it's very hard, and this goes across the board to anyone and everyone. You don't know how your words and deeds can affect other people, and it really is that ripple effect. So just take that moment and be kind, and you never know.
Yeah,
anyway,
I want
to hear about On Ice.
Well, let's see. It was kind of a fluke, actually, that I came up with writing a sports romance book because I'd never done it before. And after I read the Blades hockey series by Maria Lewis, who I had the pleasure of interviewing, she kind of inspired me to write my own story. And so that's how it began. And I based it off of my favorite hockey team, which is the San Jose Sharks, and mm-hmm. Brett Burns, who's known as Burnsy. And so my character, Kai Connery, is the star defense player. And the female lead is Zoe Simmons, who's the owner's daughter, who's also the assistant to the general manager. So it was a great start, and the best friend, and the two best friends, were also dating, but they had issues in the beginning. So it just culminates into a group of people who, for whatever reason, they're pulled apart cruelly by outside forces, and they look for comfort in people they know and trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so the exes pull together, you know, Kai and Jesse, who's the secondary female lead,
mm-hmm.
and get together, and then Flynn
and Zoe
get together. And it's out of habit. It's probably, I'm sure there's a lot of people in real life who stay with someone out of habit. And this is what this
is. Oh, all the time.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't see something too unrealistic about that. You know, I've heard plenty of stories of couples who are friends with other people, and maybe a spouse dies and they marry the best friend. I don't know. Or they have an affair with the best friend. None of that happened, but, you know, it was a very angsty, you know, quadruple triangle, you know, as far as, you know, love goes. But the bottom line was Kai and Zoe still loved each other despite whatever happened in the past. So he's brought back.
I almost thought about Shania Twain, the country singer, when I was reading about this love square,
yes.
because her
yes.
husband cheated on her with her best friend, and then they divorced, and then she married her her ex-best friend's husband. And it
right.
made me think of that. So it absolutely does happen in reality, probably far more than we think, because a lot of times when you're a couple, the only people you really can hang out with is other couples. So,
right.
because, you know, those single friends, it sometimes gets a little frowned upon because the single friends are often the ones that are getting into trouble. and
yeah.
so you hang out with other couples and you become very close
yeah.
with them. And that becomes your shoulder to cry on when something happens. So
they commiserate together and, you know, try to mourn the loss of the prior relationship. And, you know, and what's more comforting than being with someone who knew the situation, you know, and it was understanding of that. And so I think when I was writing these characters, yeah, some twists and turns definitely happen. And you're kind of like, what the hell?
But that's what keeps you turning the page.
Yes.
You never know that's one thing with your novels. You never know what's going to happen next. And that is, I love that about your stories, is that you think you know what's going to happen and you just kind of take a hairpin turn in a different direction. You're like, oh, okay. Wow. I did not see that one coming.
Yeah. And then, you know, the funny thing is I just had an email from a lady who read the book On Ice. And she's comparing it to the Granite Bay series, which is probably a tamer, you know, safer type
mm-hmm.
of series, you know. And she goes, well, this is nothing what I expected. And I said, well, always expect the unexpected from me, because that's who I am. I want to always have the reader, you know, wondering what's going to happen next, and never have it be the same old, you know, like you get in a lot of romance novels. It's kind of the same cookie cutter story,
oh, yeah.
Which is fine.
Absolutely.
And there's well-written, lovely stories that I love too. But for me, when I'm writing, I always want something interesting to happen, or I want something over the top at times, you know, to make it stand apart from, you know, those types of stories. I don't want to be cookie cutter. That's not my thing.
No, and I completely, you definitely are not cookie cutter in any way, shape, or form. And I'm saying that as a reader, a fan, and a friend, you're definitely not a cookie cutter.
Thank you.
So
I appreciate that.
I know that I have to ask if you're willing to talk about what you've got in the works. I know you just did a cover reveal for your next novel,
mm-hmm.
and I am so beyond excited for this. I can't help it. I am. This is great, great premise, this book.
Yeah, I actually did share some of this. I did a sharing event on Instagram where you get a picture of your character and you talk to the audience like you're the character, which is really fun. And I did share Tora, who's the lead character in Taboo. That's my latest work in progress. And her husband is Rourke. And this is a couple who have issues because she wants to get pregnant. She's so obsessed with getting pregnant that it literally puts a wedge in their marriage. And it gets to the point where he walks out because he can't take it anymore. He loves her no matter what, but she can't see beyond getting pregnant. And the moment he leaves, she finds out she's pregnant.
And that is a heavy topic and a very true-to-life topic. You hear about it in people that you know, in celebrity. It's all over.
Right. And I did read, I've read a few accounts of that, of how infertility.
Lack of coffee.
Will pull people apart. Yes, oh, I'm drinking coffee now. Infertility will pull people apart. The stress, the obsession, you know, the disappointments, it's a roller coaster ride. It really is.
And as a nurse, I can honestly say that it will, you lock yourself into a vicious cycle, because the more you are trying to get pregnant, the less likely you're going to, because you're stressing about it. And and suddenly the sex, which is supposed to be the fun part of marriage, is suddenly not fun anymore, and it's suddenly work. And I've seen it happen. I've seen couples they've split because they couldn't handle it anymore. And then it also gets interesting if they go to other people and one half of that former couple gets pregnant. That's always, I haven't personally been there, but I've had friends who have, and that's a tough one to watch, too.
Yeah.
It's a heavy topic, but I'm so glad you're doing it.
Thank you. Yeah, it just kind of, in the original title, Taboo, actually, I was headed toward maybe writing about an actual life event that happened when I was a kid, and it was about a priest and a nun who got married. But they both have left, you know, the respective church to do so because they didn't agree with the dynamics of the church at the time. And, you know, that's kind of taboo by society. I think it still kind of is.
Sure.
So that was the original premise, but I kind of did a poll about to see if people would be more receptive to that. And people weren't really receptive to that. So I thought, well, I better change it up then. And so this came up.
I love that you do that with the polls. Have you found that you are able to direct your stories and what you're going to focus on and your tropes based on the polls?
Absolutely. And I get, you know, because my reader group is like a concentrated segment of my readers. So to get information from them is gold, you know, it's really gold. You know, do you like this type of thing? Do you like that type of thing? It really gives me an idea, you know. In fact, I improved my newsletter by just virtually, you know, polling them to say, what is it you'd like to see? Because I wanted to give them something worthwhile and something they wanted to enjoy as well. So I did that, and I revamped my newsletter to cater to them because that's my base, you know?
Yeah. So I think really also helped. That by doing that they feel like they're involved too. So
absolutely, and I always want my readers to be involved, and I don't want to be one of those readers or authors that are kind of standoffish once you get to a certain level. I never want to be that person. I do admit right now I'm very busy with different things, so I have less time, but I really try to make the effort to be there, you know, to talk, to interact,
mm-hmm.
to say hello and, you know, be human with them because, I mean, without them, there's nothing, you know.
Yeah.
As a writer, you know, you write for yourself, which is great, but you hopefully will, you know, have an audience to also write for as well.
Absolutely. So how did you become a writer? What's your story there?
Well, at the time I was single, I was watching this little movie called Bridget Jones' Diary. And at that time, it just spoke volumes to me as a single person. And I just loved it. It was funny. It was, you know, it was
one of my favorite movies.
You had all the feels, right? And you had the Colin Firth, who's gorgeous. And just, you know, took me by storm. And so I started getting obsessed with the whole storyline. So I found fan fiction and how people were writing about, extenuating the characters in their, you know, the storyline. I thought, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. So I thought, you know, I might as well give it a stab and see how I can do. At the time, I didn't know anything about dialogue. I didn't know anything about structure, any of that for, you know, for stories. So I very badly wrote this great story. And I was getting awesome reviews despite bad grammar and, you know, the bad dialogue. Not the
right.
bad dialogue, but the incorrect grammar and punctuation, whatever. And so I was shocked. I really was. I didn't expect anyone to even like it. And that kind of launched my writing. And I thought at that point, well, why can't I just write my own book? And that's how I developed Just As He Is, which is based on one of the lines in the movie. Colin Firth mm-hmm. tells Bridget that he likes her just the way she is. So I kind of devised a character named Sir Colin Worth, who's an actor, and then this banker who writes in her off time but is in banking and is not realizing her dreams. And so these two somehow get together through a production company he has, and he bought one of her stories, and then the love story starts from there. And
I love
the characters around them. And it's a great little, it was my very first standalone, and it took me 5 years to publish. So
now you've also gone in different directions, though, as well, into different genres. You're not just
yes.
in romance.
No, and then my second series that came out, it's no longer available, but it was a fantasy series about archangels, which I love. I love anything to do with angels. So I did actual archangel stories, and, you know, those were real well received at the beginning, but, you know, I think at some point, you know, when you do your first novels and you don't really have an editor, you really need to revamp that type of story if you want to really promote it to the public,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like that wasn't something I had done correctly, so I pulled them off. So maybe at some point I'll get them revamped and resubmit them to the public.
Oh, I
so
think
that'd
be wonderful.
Yeah, it was written Among the Stars and Beneath the Stars were the two books, and so great stories. They really were great stories, I felt, and then came along Dimensions and Indescribably Blue. And Dimensions is a paranormal story because I'm fascinated with UFOs, and that's what that story is about. But it also goes into another layers of reincarnation, believe it or not, and kind of an Elvis, reincarnated Elvis character, who's a police officer. And if you know anything about Elvis, he was fascinated with police officers and
he was,
and all that. So that's an interesting read. That was really a fun read, and there were some aspects to it that no one could figure out how he's going to get out of, but somehow it all worked out. So this police officer's also he's also a Elvis impersonator by night. Not too many people know about it.
Love so, it. Does he also like peanut butter and banana sandwiches?
No. No, but it's kind of like the queen. It would be the queen version of Elvis. You know, Elvis had kind of a really heavy-duty lifestyle, you know, before he passed. And this lifetime, he's being a lawman. He's trying to struggle with this weird encounter and all this, you know, all the other things that go along with a UFO encounter. If you've ever done any research on that, that's craziness. You know, people's lives are just totally disrupted, and they just don't know what end is up because it's such an intense experience for them, and no one believes them, or no one, mm-hmm. you know, someone thinks they're, yep. you know, dreaming it, or, you know, it's really, but there's concrete evidence. In fact, in the book itself, Dimensions, the female who this police officer responds to, saying there's weird, you know, there's an intruder, when he finally finds her, they found some interesting slit in her wrist, and they removed a little object that was like
a tracking device. Oh, that's scary.
And this there's actually video of a doctor who would actually remove these things, and they were so intelligent that they would move every time he tried to get it out. It took him a while for him to finally remove it, but it was like a tracking device.
I think there's a whole lot out there that we don't know about. I really, you know, and I think and everyone is entitled to their own opinion. I've always believed, though, that this is a very vast universe, and to think that we are the only creatures out here floating around in this giant Milky Way and galaxy. No.
Yeah.
I find that very hard to believe.
And, you know, the funny thing is that actually, I live in a county. I live in Polk County in Oregon. It's probably one of the most heavily sighted UFO areas.
It is.
I know. It's like it was. Yeah. When I found that out, I was kind of like, whoa. And I know my neighbors who kind of live out. We don't kind of live in town, but they live out in the country, and they always are having sightings. They've seen tons of UFOs above their home. And they're large. They're, you know, so it's really, you know, amazing to have those experiences.
And for people who don't are not familiar with Oregon, I find it amusing that you and I didn't meet until after I'd left Oregon. But both of us having lived in Oregon, I grew up in a very heavily populated New York, and I was used to town. There was, you know, your idea of country was a park or a farm stand. And you go to Oregon, and because you were saying that you live in town, but your friend lives in the country, I don't know if a lot of people truly grasp just how desolate parts of Oregon are.
Oh,
I mean, you could go missing and not be found for months.
Yes.
There's nothing around.
Yeah, and, you know, because they have kind of like a planned development where they don't allow, you know, the urban sprawl outside mm-hmm. of the limits of their cities, which I love because it really contains, you know, what California has done is just turned into one big, you know, shopping mall, you know.
Absolutely.
And
Oregon's
a lot of
gorgeous.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful. Hey, we got a caller. Would you like to take a call?
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Hello, you're on the air with Julie and Trish.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, good evening.
How are you?
How are you, ladies? I'm doing fine. How are y'all doing?
We're just grabbing a mile a minute.
Oh, I know. I've been listening, Ian. That's right.
You're going,
we're good at chatting.
Yeah.
Oh, we I know. I'm excited. No, I do have a question. I mean, what inspired both y'all actually to become writers?
Trisha, you want to take that first?
Okay. Don't take this the wrong way, but when I was in high school, a creative writing teacher told me I was a great, you know, I really had a talent. And I just kind of looked at him like, yeah, whatever. So I didn't really believe him. And honestly, I hated writing. I really did. I just didn't like it. I didn't like journaling. I didn't like, you know, keeping a diary, none of that. I never had any thought of writing a book. Yeah, they always tell you that. And I've had a few intuitive friends tell me, you need to write a book. And I said, no, I don't think so. And then, like I was explained earlier, the fan fiction came along, and so I thought I'd take my hand at it, and I just kind of flipped a switch somehow, and I started writing. So I know it's counterintuitive.
Well, you know, I didn't, when I was in high school and going through school, I was put into a program when I was in, I don't know, fourth grade, fifth grade, something like that, because of my writing ability. And so everyone pushed me to want to be a writer, but they want to tell you how to write and what to write. And I was not a fan of Shakespeare, and I was not a fan of Tolstoy. And I didn't understand. I had this idea that if I didn't love these people and devour all of their works, that I couldn't be a writer. And of course, you have some very snobby kids in the school that tell you the same thing. So I didn't think that I fit the mold of a writer. But I always had a very vivid imagination. I was an only child, and I was alone a lot. So, you know, my best friends were the ones I made up in my head, and I created whole worlds based around them. So I just had to put together the idea, the crazy imagination with my, you know, my writing ability, and that's how it came about.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And don't you write a little bit too?
I'm talking about, no, ma'am, I'm trying to learn how to do that. That's why I asked, what inspired you basically to do that, to start writing? But I'm thinking about getting started on that.
You should. Gotta find me. Do it.
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
I'm going to.
Well, I mean, you started writing poetry for a while there. I know. I saw that on Instagram.
I did.
So,
and I told my husband how good it is. He said, well, don't think about how good it is. Just keep doing it. So.
Exactly. And a lot of times, things that you might look at and think, oh, this is garbage, this is no good, that could touch someone else very deeply. I've had times, and Trisha can actually back this one up. I had called her up, or I was texting with, I don't know, it was one of the, and I said, that's it. I'm throwing out the whole rock star romance. I'm throwing it out. It's stupid. It's horrible. It's crap. And she was like, do not do that. And she said, calm down. Go do whatever you have to do to calm down. Step away from it. Don't touch it. And I went back to it, and I wrote her, and I said, oh, it actually is pretty good. And she's like, I told you. So sometimes we get into our own heads that, oh, we're not, and we all go through that. Any creative goes through that. We're not any good. This is ridiculous. And that's when you really do have to just step away from it, because I guarantee it's a hell of a lot better than you think it is. And it's
and
touching people.
Not touching people per se, but,
yeah, but
emotionally touching them.
Yes. The clarification.
Yes. And, you know, if you want to write whatever you want to write, read that.
Mm-hmm.
Read what you want to write, because I'm telling you, it makes you a better author, honestly. I mean, I've improved so much reading. It's it's mind-boggling.
No, it definitely,
so what is
that's
it,
definitely true.
Mm-hmm. And so what is it that you want to write?
With me, I just want to write something like, start out with like short stories, like that's happened through my family, stuff that's very kind of interesting. So off and on, I'll just think about
absolutely.
That. But yeah,
absolutely.
There's a huge market
absolutely.
For that. There really
mm-hmm.
is. People
mm-hmm.
like to hear. People, we okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's admit it. We're all suckers for if it comes across when we're watching television. Based on a true
mm-hmm.
story, suddenly everyone's ears perk up and we're like, oh,
yeah.
well, this could be good
mm-hmm.
now, because we know it's not a Hollywood fiction. So
yeah.
writing stories that are based on your experiences or your family's experiences,
mm-hmm.
absolutely, 100%. People love that.
And, you know, you've read a few of my short stories, I think,
uh-huh.
Susan, that I've written,
uh-huh.
and those have helped me, and poetry has helped me when I get kind of into my mind of writer's block with my books. So it's a really creative outlet, and you don't put so much pressure on yourself, because when you're writing a book and you know you're on chapter 10 and
mm-hmm.
you want to do chapter
mm-hmm.
you know 30 chapters. You're only a third of the way, that kind of puts a lot of pressure on yourself. But a short story really gives you more of a leeway, I think, not so much pressure to get, you know,
mm-hmm.
your thoughts on paper and
yeah.
and chronologing your family history.
Mm-hmm.
That's really amazing. And I know we had chatted before about that ghost woman that you talked
mm-hmm.
about and how
oh,
you
yeah.
were how you were so fascinated. That would be a wonderful story, because people love the paranormal. They love anything that's, you know, that's based on history. And so those two combinations.
Susan, now you have to do it. You have to write it. Now I want to hear about the ghost woman.
Well, I actually got,
yeah.
you know, my mother's diary. You know, my mother left a diary from, like, it was in the 1930s, and that's what I'm going through now. And I said, I'd love to write about some of the stories that she just, you know, had, and, you know, and my husband said, yeah, I think that'd be a great thing to do, you know, because, you know, she had a lot of things, and it was very interesting through, you know, what her childhood when she was growing up.
Oh, absolutely, and not only that, but I feel like it will strengthen the bond between you and your mom
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that you're getting to learn, you're getting to see the world
mm-hmm.
through her eyes and learn some of her, maybe her secrets,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is incredibly important when a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if your mom is still with us or not, but for me, the
no,
stories
ma'am.
Of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she passed
away. So it'll make you feel closer.
Kind of, yeah, and she's just got a lot of, you know, fascinating things that she's kept up with. So, yeah.
It keeps it alive,
yeah.
too. It keeps her alive.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. It keeps,
yes,
as long as the stories are still being told, then they're still here. Sorry.
Be a storyteller. That's such a gift. You know, I don't know if you've seen my illustrious family tree, but my cousin, Melissa, had done our family tree, and I thought, oh, she's just going to find, you know, the run-of-the-mill people, and turns out she found a survival of the Salem witch trials. I'm related to Ray Bradbury. I'm related to Waldo Emerson. Waldo. Yeah.
Wow.
And Halle Berry is my fourth cousin removed. So.
Okay, you need to get on that right now.
Yeah.
So. I know. I was just as shocked as the rest of the people.
mm-hmm.
I could send that to you so you could take a look at it. But it's so cool. Like, talk about Salem witch trials.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how incredibly intense would
mm-hmm.
that be to write about, you know, and the survival. And she survived.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Bradbury survived. And she's one of the few that did. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, your family history is so illustrious that way, you know, and bringing forth those
mm-hmm.
tales,
mm-hmm.
I think would be fascinating to read.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely,
I'm going to try to get
yeah.
started on that. Yeah. That's what we
found
the diary.
And one dollar at a time.
Yeah. That's what my husband, he said. Yeah, he said, I think that would be a good thing to do, you know, to because I found her diary and none of the rest of our sisters and brothers were interested. And I said, well, I'm interested. I want to see what it's all about, you know.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
A gift. But she's giving you a gift, so you don't
mm-hmm.
waste the gift. Use it.
That's right. Exactly. But yeah, going back.
I'm definitely excited to hear about it.
Yeah, the ghost stories. Now, there's quite a couple of them. I have remembered through, you know, my childhood and things like that. My husband said, yeah, those type of things you know actually people might be really interested in. So.
Right.
Well, you're down in Mississippi, right, Susan?
Yes, ma'am, Mississippi.
That's what I thought, and they're real big. I know because my half sister by marriage.
Mm-hmm.
She does genealogy down there, and she is
mm-hmm.
says that they are huge into ghost stories in the Deep South.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Yep. The South is known for.
Well,
so, like, we had, I had a lady, my niece, going back to a story that told her, I said, I'd like to write a piece on that, which I'm doing some study on that now, trying to get, the facts and get down to what, you know, actually happened. But we had a home here in Mississippi. It was called Bethesda Home for Girls. And these girls were tortured and, you know, abused and things like that. And she said, I think that's the kind of story you need to come out with, you know. So, yeah, doing some
definitely.
Research on that one. Yeah.
I really,
that's
there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Iceline kind of came to be is, I
mm-hmm.
talk about it in the book a little bit about how I had,
mm-hmm.
I think I had a Bigfoot encounter when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
My father thought he'd like to camp out in the wilderness, you know, because that's his thing,
mm-hmm.
and drag the rest of the family with him. And I woke up out of a dead sleep, seriously, a dead sleep. And
mm-hmm.
I got the hackles on the back of my neck rose. Everything was so quiet, you couldn't hear anything. And I knew something was out there, and I was scared. I was terrified. I was
mm-hmm.
terrified because I was a very sensitive child. I could sense things in my environment. And then the next morning, I go out, and there's these huge footprints in the snow. And Northern California is definitely the home of Sasquatch and Bigfoot, and yeah. So, you know, you never know how that's going to culminate years later into Eyeshine. So, go for it.
Yeah. We
exactly.
Got that
right about what interests you.
Yeah, we got a story
yes.
here going around. It's like where I live now, like a little small town, like it's Beaumont. They call it, actually, they've always called it the Beaumont Booger. And I was like, no, but where we live,
yes.
Miss Tricia asked me that, was it kind of like a, where we have by our house is just mostly wood, but some of it isn't like a, it's like it's standing water a lot, and
mm-hmm.
so it's kind of interesting.
Swampy.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See what now?
Yeah. There's like
mm-hmm.
swamp.
Yeah.
And everybody keeps saying, they know this has happened because I mean it goes back to even a lot of the older people here. That I had spoke with about. I said, well, I never
yep.
heard that. She said, yeah. She said, this is, you know, it's been real. She said, it's even been spotted. And I was like, well, I've never seen that. But I told, you know, my husband said, I'd like to do some research on that.
Well, that because Mississippi is one of the most haunted towns I've ever seen. And when I went and visited it, it was, I mean, beautiful. I love Natchez, but it's definitely
mm-hmm.
on the haunted side.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, as far as any type of the missing link, there, you know, some people speculate
uh-huh.
as Bigfoot or the Giganticus primate. There's all been reports in all 48 states in Alaska
uh-huh.
and around the world.
Oh.
There's, you know, the abominable snowman. there's the Orin Pendak. I can go on and on, because there was a bridge from North America to Asia that they had, that speculation may have crossed. And
yeah.
So it's a fascinating topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And if you ever see The Legend of Boggy Creek, that film totally made an impression on me. That was about in the swamp area. I don't know if it was Oklahoma or somewhere down there, but the Okefenokee, I think, is where it was. And talk about, I was scared. I was scared with that movie. It was it wasn't well made, but it scared the shit out of me.
I have not heard of that one. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good story. I really did. It was one of those that just intrigued me, you know, and stays with you. You know how those stories just stay with you? I'm sure, like, when you start reading your mom's diary, that, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, or, you know.
Yeah.
So,
how long did she keep the diary? I know you said she started in the 30s. Did she keep it her whole life?
Yes, ma'am, she did. Actually, she started writing when she was a teenager and kept all this down, and all her family, you know, tree about her family, about her mom, her dad, her brothers. And then when she married my dad, she was 14 when she got married. So, and then she started keeping up with, you know, all that, you know, from then. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm curious to know if there's events that you remember as well, you know, years later that she wrote about. It's always interesting to get the different personal perspective on an event.
Yeah, there's one or two instances that I, you know, remember from her always telling. And I think I've told this to Miss Tricia about years ago. She would talk about there was a girl that had drowned in a river there close to where they were living, and she would tell the stories about this, about, you know, people having visions and things like that, talking about how, you know, they couldn't find this girl for days and days. And then she said this lady that she grew up with told them, said, well, look, I can tell you exactly where the body is and how to get to it. And come to find out, it was actually real, because she told her, she said, it's wedged between two logs, you know, and got her stuck in between them two logs, and when they went to find it, it was absolutely true. So,
wow.
Things like that.
I'm excited. Yeah. I want to see this diary brought to life. I think this could be an incredible journey for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got
definitely
a lot of things.
Definitely do it.
At all, but, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep listening in to y'all and just see what y'all yapping about.
What we're talking about.
Pretty much it right there, yapping about.
Hey, that's me too.
Like a couple of chihuahuas.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, considering I'm not even 5 feet tall, that actually is a pretty accurate description. Yeah, I have been called a chihuahua before, so.
Oh, I definitely have, because I'm not a 5'2", so I know where you know where that's at.
Yeah. And Trisha, how tall are you?
I'm 5. Okay, there's a discrepancy. I thought I was like 5'2.5", and I went to the doctor and they said I'm 5'3.5", and at one time I was 5'4". So take a pick. I think right now by 3.5.
You're still on the short side, girl. Sorry.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I need to get something off the top shelf. I need to get my tongs. I need to get tongs to get them.
Yep.
To get anything off the top shelf.
I have a step stool that I literally have to. I mean, we've actually made it now in the kitchen where anything that I need, we just keep on the bottom two shelves, because he puts his stuff on the upper two shelves because he can reach it. He's 6 foot tall. I can just stand there and look at it, or I can make the climb up on top of the counter, which never ends well, or I can grab the step stool, which I'm just not going to do, or I can, you know, try to find something to hit with it that will, you know, it's just easier and safer to let him do it.
So this has turned into short authors
and Bigfoot.
Yes.
That's
yes.
right.
And we know Bigfoot is not short. My husband's 6'2",
yeah.
so, you know, that's, you know, he makes fun of my size,
yeah.
which I think is unfair, but that's okay.
I thought I was the only one. My husband did that too, but yeah, my husband is 6'5", so yeah, I'm like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
How tall are you, Susan?
I'm 5'2". Short,
oh,
short.
Okay, I'm taller than you. Ha. I'm taller than
yeah,
both
that's
of you.
My husband,
it's not hard to be taller than me.
That's it. My husband says, "You're so short." Yeah. But I always tell him, I said, "Well, you know what? I said, my legs reach from my rump to the ground just like yours does." He's like, "Hey, you know." I'm just 5'2".
Well, I actually
yeah.
heard something that said that things only grow until they reach the perfect height, and some of us just got there sooner than others. So I'm going to go
right.
with that one.
That's right. There you go.
That's right.
That's appropriate. Right? Mm-hmm. I think that can work
yeah,
from three
right.
short women.
Yeah.
That's
There's
true.
Nothing wrong with that. I own it. So let's get back onto topic, which it could be anything at this point because we've covered
Did you
want to
talk
aliens?
Yeah, no, I'm still listening.
Did you
want to
talk
to me in a little bit?
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said I'm gonna listen in.
Okay, I'm gonna put you on hold.
All right,
okay,
go ahead.
Thank you for calling.
Bye,
we appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care.
Y'all too.
Okay,
bye,
oh,
Susan.
Hold on. So, yeah, I'm all yours, whatever you want.
Okay. Okay, well, I think to maybe just a couple questions to wrap it up would be, what's your plan for 2020, your writing plan? We know Taboo is coming out in the fall. And what else? I've been pushing because you are an amazing poet. Your poetry is wonderful, and I have been pushing for you to put it together into a compilation and release it. But tell me, what's on tap for 2020?
Well, as you know, it's part of the Soul Sisters Romance. It's a group for a platform for authors to come together to do promos and takeovers and whatever, and you know, to promote each other. We're offering a dark anthology in fall of 2020, and that's part of what Taboo is going to be part of, that dark anthology romance.
Oh,
so,
very nice.
I
did not know that was going to be part of the anthology. Wonderful.
Yes. Plus, I think one of your books is going to be there too, wasn't it?
It will be, yes. Yes, my
excellent.
First foray into dark romance, but I am excited
Great.
To try it.
Yes, and I find I really like to write psychotic characters, and a couple of my readers.
You're good at it.
Yes, because there's actually one of those I'm writing now in Taboo, so that is an interesting eye-opener, because you have to really stay on point with that type of thing, you know, when you have a psychopath. You really have to know what you're doing. And you know what really helps is watching, you know, ID, Discovery ID, you know, with all the crime shows, and haven't watched too much lately because I've been promoting On Ice, but that really helps me get ideas for my psychotic character, Dennis Evers, who's kind of unraveling at the seams right now. So, and it's part of
Taboo.
So
you have a psychological thriller twist to this dark romance,
yeah, it
which
is
wonderful.
And, you know, and like anything else, that was a total surprise to me. I had no clue that would show up. It started as an ex, and then it turned into this, morphed into this psychotic person. So it was.
That
it
actually
was,
begs the question, are you a plotter or a pantser or a bit of both?
I'm a pantser.
Okay. No, that's what I've spoken to a ton of authors who are who are pantsers. I mean, Stephen King is a pantser, and I think, you know, he's pretty good. He's amazing. He's one of my absolute favorites.
He's notable. Yes, absolutely.
You've heard of
my
him,
dear
right?
friend.
I mean,
yes, of course. Yes. My dear friend Shonda is my story consult. So I said, okay, we need to talk about this or that. And she calls me. I talk to her. We plot out the chapter. And right now we're working on chapter 12 of, you know, Taboo. So she's been with me on several books, and it's amazing the collaboration that we come up with. And, you know, and she's the kind of person that will say, no, that's not going to work. So she keeps me in my place,
that.
Which is good.
I absolutely need that guidance.
Yes, we all do. I think every author needs that blunt friend who's going to say, no.
You are that blunt friend for me.
But I'm trying to be, I try to be nice about it.
You are. No, you're very nice about it. But you also, I am forever indebted to you for your stern tone in telling me that you step away from that story. You do not touch it. You do not delete it.
Yes.
And I'm forever grateful because, like I said, we all get into funks. So, all right. So I'm curious now. So you have, you're a pantser. Now I'm a plotter.
Okay.
I'm actually a plotter. I'm a plotter pantser. So I will get I'll get an idea and I'll write it out and I'll write the scene list out because I want to make certain all the little boxes are checked. That's definitely my type A personality.
Right.
And then the characters will go, yeah, I don't want to do that. And they're going to go off on their little rabbit trail. And I'm like, where the hell are you going? And they're like, we're going here. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to take this route then. So, you know, best laid plans. And so it's a mix of plotting and pantsing. I have an idea. So with you, do you just start with a kernel of an idea and then, or do you build a few scenes first?
No. What I do is I do a little synopsis for myself, and that I do all the characters, their traits, who they are, what they do, you know, their careers, what they look like, and I develop the cast of characters first. And then I kind of go with the idea of the story behind it, I kind of go into the story and then write it, start writing. And it's amazing what comes up that way, but I have to write it down because I don't want to forget what eye color or height this person is or that character is, and sometimes that happens. You don't remember everything, so it's a nice guide for me to refer back to.
Oh, absolutely, and especially when you have several books under your belt like you do, the characters can start, you know, you can be like, wait a second, does this character have gray eyes like Kai does, or you know, gray eyes or blue eyes, or are they blue-gray, or what term did I use in the last book about this character, you know.
Exactly.
I have a friend who said something about that she was like, oh, I had to go back to the last book and go, what the heck color was his eye?
Yeah, exactly. And so, in fact, some of my Granite Bay characters are showing up in my other work in progress called The Staircase in the Woods, which is going to be a thriller, supernatural thriller romance. So that was kind of fun. That's kind of fun. So why don't you tell everyone where they can follow you on, you know, on social media?
Oh, well, I mean, I have a couple of seconds to. I am on Instagram at mlbroomauteur. I have Broom's Badass Book Lovers, which is my Facebook readers group, and that's a lot of fun. Again, hasn't been getting as much love as it should. And then, of course, www.mlbroom.com is my website, and it is going through a rebrand. I'm going through a rebrand, so hopefully there'll be some fun and interesting things coming in the near future.
Absolutely. And everyone can find me on Instagram at author Trisha Harley McCarthy. I'm also on Facebook at Trisha Harley McCarthy Books, and the VIP reader group is called Trisha's Treat. So I'm also on Facebook individually as Trisha Harley McCarthy. So you can find me on that. And I'm also, all my books are on social, on Amazon. And I believe all of your books are on Amazon as well.
They are. I do not have as many as you, but my new box set, which is coming out on February 2nd, is on Amazon, so you can pre-order it today.
Great. And next week, the 25th, will be our guest will be Phoenix Williams, who will be discussing her work. So thank you for joining us today. We had a great time.
Yay.
Enjoy. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Saturday. Hold on.
Take care, lovelies.
Mm-hmm.